ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
It is absolutely necessary that we all get together. We work together. We respect each other. We like and love each other.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide in WBC Boxing TV. 37, make that 38 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Gloves champion. I've won a couple of awards for boxing. So supposedly, I know a little bit about boxing, but I've always found that the average fan has a different perspective of the sport. So in view of last night's great fight there, of course, on ESPN, I'm talking about Jose Ramirez losing the a portion of the 140-pound crown, of course, to the undisputed champion now, Josh Taylor of Glasgow, Scotland. We'll hear from Josh in a little bit, but the bottom line is, it was a class act on ESPN, no doubt about that. The right guy won the end of the night. We've got a star in the UK that could probably fill a soccer stadium, and that's good for the business and the sport of boxing. Open phone lines all around the planet, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. If you're thinking about the Twitch thing, the Twitch broadcast is dead for this weekend. We'll talk about that later in the show, but it'll be up and rocking for the next week's show, both Saturday and Sunday. Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, comes to you on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, except for today. But we're coming to you live on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms, including iHeartRadio.com. So straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated, but never duplicated. Find out why. My guests today include Sir Kenneth Rainford from the UK, the UK ace, the aforementioned world champion. I'm talking about Mr. Josh Taylor. We'll hear from Dr. Netan Sethi, the brain doctor and boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer as well. That and more today on the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, sponsored by the World Boxing Council. Down to the nightclub.
Now the fun begins.
Sounds of the mighty Tower of Power, the boys from Oakland, California. Of course, the band leader, Emilio Castillo. Those guys have been rocking since 1968. Check it, towerofpower.com. They've got some new, Cuddy calls them musical drops. I think they were called records when I was a kid. But the bottom line is, they're no longer CDs. They're called musical drops, according to the Cut Man. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, to WBC Boxing TV as well. We had a war going on last night. Well, it was a war of sorts at 140 pounds. Of course, Josh Taylor coming to us from Glasgow, Scotland, coming in unbeaten, 17 fights. People said, he ain't all that much. Plus, he's from England, right? Well, bottom line was, he was favored in this fight. And some of the odds had it 2-1, 3-1. One even had it 4.5-1. But the bottom line is, when it came fight time, it was an engaging battle between two willing warriors. No doubt about that. Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez. Of course, Jose Ramirez down in the sixth round and again in the seventh round. In the seventh round, especially hard and failing boxing 101. I mean, boxing trainer Robert Garcia, sorry, pal, I hate to knock you on this one, but he came up second again. He came in second again. But this time, your guy showed boxing flaws. I'm talking about stepping out of that clinch with his hands not, with his chin up in the air and his hands not in position. Bottom line is, he was dropped. I mean, dropped so hard, he was out on the way down. Of course, I thought he got woken up by the canvas at the end of the night. Of course, he lasted a 12 rounds, and it lasted 36 minutes. Of course, the fight went to the scorecards, 114-112 all across the three scorecards. That was the same score that the boxing PhD, who we'll hear from in hour number two, Mr. Socrates Palmer, had as well. So bottom line is, Mr. Taylor, a deserving winner, no doubt about that. Let's check in with the champ post-fight.
All right, we're here with the new undisputed junior welterweight champion of the world, still getting sorted out with all the new belts. Josh, describe the feeling.
Well, listen, I'm ecstatic, you know. I've trained my whole life for this, man. I've dedicated my whole life for this moment. I've dreamt of it so many times over, man. I'm so happy. I'm over the moon, man. I'm over the moon. I've trained it. I've trained for this moment all my life. Mum, Dad, Finch, Danielle, I told you I would do it. I told you I would do it. We've done it. All the hard work's paid off. I love yous. I love yous. I love you so much.
Someone who was crucial in your road to undisputed and who planted that seed was Ken Buchanan, the first Scottish undisputed champion in the two-belt era. Now you've done it in the four-belt era. What message do you want to send to him? What does he mean to you?
I'm just like you, champ. I did it just like you. I'll see you when I get home. Much love. He's a legend. I'm a legend. You gave me so much inspiration to do this. And I'm just like you. I'll see you soon, champ.
Now, you said you were going to stop him. He said he was going to stop you. What do you think helped get him up off that canvas in the sixth and the seventh round?
Oh, I've got nothing but love for Ramirez. I mean, all this week it was no disrespect. It was all just part of the mind games to get inside his head, to make him more eager to jump in at me and make him more aggressive to use his aggression against him. We said that all week in the build-up. We're going to use his aggression against him. And that's what we did. We played the games up until this week. It was just purely to get in his head. There was no disrespect. It's all love. I've got nothing but love and respect for Ramirez. I think he was a great champion, a great ambassador for the sport. And I've got nothing but respect for him. And I wish him all the best in the future.
I'm going to go talk to Jose in a few minutes. But it was a very touching moment when he came up to you. You gave each other a hug. What was said between two warriors?
It was just nothing but respect and love, you know. He wasn't happy with the way, obviously, my mannerism through the week. But I said to him, listen, it was no disrespect. It was all just to get inside your head and make you more aggressive. And that's what I did. And he accepted it. He accepted my apology for maybe the way I was acting. And we're all good. So he wished me all the best and blessed me well with my family. So he's a really good person.
On the broadcast, your performance was described as sublime, athletic, excellent boxing, power, of course. How would you describe what you just did tonight in the ring against another elite fighter in Jose Ramirez?
I thought it was a great performance, you know. At times I gave him a little bit more success than, you know, I could have gave him by holding my feet and letting him get his punches off. If I kept moving like I did a few times, he would have never got near me the whole 12 rounds. It would have been a shutout. I thought the scorecards were a little bit tight. I thought they were well wider than that, you know. I wasn't too happy with the selection of the judges, but I wasn't going to moan because I was so confident in winning this fight anyway. So, and it's told, you know, two knockdowns, and I won most of the rounds, and this scored at 1-1-4, 1-1-12, I think it was, which is a bit too close for my liking.
So basically, if you hadn't scored those knockdowns, it would have been a draw. So
yeah,
did you believe that going in? What were the instructions that Ben was giving you that worked for you, especially down the stretch? Because it seemed you were conserving some energy for that final run.
No, I wasn't conserving energy. I was boxing him. I was boxing him using his aggression against him and picking him off. You know, using my jab, using the feints, making him hesitant to come in. And when he came in, I made him pay for it a couple of times by decking him and putting him on his backside. You know, so that was the plan all along, to box him and keep smart, not to conserve energy. I could have fought that 12 rounds at a frantic pace if I wanted to, but that wasn't the smart plan to do.
You've cleaned out 140 pounds. You went through Baranchik, you went through Postal, you went through Regis Prograis. Now you've gone through Jose Ramirez. What is next for you?
I don't know. We'll take it as it comes. You know, the options aren't going to be short of what's coming next. But listen, there's a new Warrior King on the map, and he's from Barney, Scotland. And that's the third Mexican I've beaten in a row, you know, so there we go. He's the new Warrior King, and he's from Scotland. Let's do it. Anybody who wants to fight, let's go.
You know, I remember when I was the King of Scotland. No, I never boxed there. I was the number one boxing writer from America. Of course, I would write in the Glasgow Sunday Post, which had a 1.5 million Sunday circulation. It was a Sunday paper. It only came out once a week, but it was the voice of Scotland, without a doubt, of course. And I had this weekly column, and it was sort of cool. They paid me a few bucks to do it. But I remember one time I went to a fight in the UK. I think it was a Princeton Seema Med fight. Maybe I'm repeating myself here. But the bottom line is some lady pictured me and called me from out of the crowd. Some fan called me out of the crowd and called me out of something I had written in the Glasgow Sunday Post. So those were the good times, writing in newspapers, no doubt about that. So Josh Taylor drops Ramirez twice. Had he not dropped him twice, the fight would have been a draw. Now, that would have been a bit of a crime. But then I've got to tell Mr. Taylor here, you've got to be a bit more aggressive. I think he was sort of cocky. In other words, he's handling this guy. He dropped him twice. He's handling him. And he sort of got complacent, I think, to extent. I think that's the word he wanted to use here, complacency. And I think it doesn't work in professional boxing because, you know, it almost bit him in the butt. I mean, when the scores are 114, 112 across the board, including the scorecards submitted by our boxing PhD, Socrates Palmer, is coming up in hour number two, You know the fight was close. With two knockdowns, the fight was close. Ramirez won his share of rounds, and he won his share of rounds by being aggressive and trying to go to the body, and that was his forte. I mean, that was what he did. That was it. I mean, outside of going to the body, he didn't really score too much to Taylor's head. Taylor takes a good punch, and at the end of the day, I think the 140-pound world champion returns to Glasgow, Scotland with his buddy Ken Buchanan. Of course, Ken Buchanan, the guy that bitched and moaned for like 35 or 40 years about Roberto Duran hitting him low, of course, knocking him out in that 1972 world lightweight bout at Madison Square Garden in June of 1972. But Kenny Buchanan was bitching about that at the International Boxing Hall of Fame, I guess about 10 or 15 years ago. And I think he might have had a couple of ales. That's what they call beers over there in the UK. So anyway, he's going off how Duran fouled him and this and that. I said, well, how many rounds do you think you won before Duran fouled you? I mean, how many rounds did you win? I don't think he won a minute in all those rounds. He didn't. Okay? So that shut him up real quick. He didn't have no more to say. But the bottom line is Kenny Buchanan backing Josh Taylor, both guys from Scotland, no doubt about the pride of Scotland. And what's good about the game of boxing is that this kid can go over to the UK and he can draw Terence Crawford over there. He can draw, you know, do 40,000 people in a stadium. Who can do that? Crawford can't draw 8,000 people in Omaha, Nebraska at $2 a ticket. Okay, so, I mean, he's a guy with nowhere to go. He backed out of the Spence fight. When I say he backed out, he didn't want to give Spence 60-40. He didn't want to split 50-50. Each guy wanted 60-40. Of course, Spence now, the undefeated lad out of Texas, going to take on Manny Pacquiao, the faded warrior, 42 years old, WBA champion, of course, coming to us from out of the Philippines. That's a bit sad. In some people's mind, it's a mismatch, but then in other people's mind, it's a competitive match because of the fact that, you know, Spence, although he's around 30, and of course he's young and undefeated and bright and always looks like he's on a marijuana buzz, just kidding. But the bottom line is he flipped out of that car at 105 miles an hour. And when you do that, I just don't think you can ever be the same again. And when it'll come to, when it'll come into play, I think, is when Manny catches him with that left hand cross. Cause see, the problem with fighting Manny Pacquiao is you don't see his punches coming a lot of time. The punches that knock you out don't see you. Miguel Cotto, I didn't see him. And the ones he didn't see the punches coming at him. A lot of guys don't see Manny's punches because he's a southpaw. He punches in an unorthodox manner without a doubt. And he shoots those, even now he's shooting right hooks. I mean, early on he was just a one-armed bandit throwing a left cross, much like the Deontay Wilder. We'll talk about that in a bit. Of course, Wilder and Fury are going to rumble again. But Wilder is the ultimate in the one-trick pony. I mean, only the right hand. But back in the day when Pacquiao was first breaking out, 122 pounds, 126 pounds, he was limited. All he had was that left cross. Of course, Freddie Groach took him to school. He's become a much better fighter, a much complete fighter. But at 42 years old, taking on Errol Spence, who's in his prime, his athletic prime, will that be a mismatch or will it be a great upset? We'll see. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. We take it to the UK after the break. Bring in Sir Kenneth Rainford, our boxing saint. No doubt about that. Sir Kenny and more on Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the break.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
Let's do it. Anybody who wants to fight, let's go.
Check it. 26 minutes past the hour. Hour number one is two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC. Of course, you can check out the World Boxing Council on their website at WBCboxing.com. Straight up, no live stream today. We'll get that together. It's in the repair shop. We'll have that down and ready to go next Saturday. Of course, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we're talking boxing on the Sports Byline broadcast now. We can't seem to get the connection with Sir Kenny Rainford talking about a weak internet connections on the East, in the UK or something like that. Bottom line is we'll be trying to do that. So now we'll switch into a segment I'll call Hector and I. Of course, Hector Martinez and I have been friends since 1973, big boxing buddies. We trained together, almost lived together as far as boxing and living and dying together as far as boxing was concerned. But This point in time is 1983, January 1983, and Pepino Cuevas, the former Mexican welterweight champion, is going to take on Roberto Duran, the former lightweight champion, at the L.A. Sports Arena. This is on the USC campus, University of Southern California campus, down there in January of 1983. Now, of course, Hector's driving, so that means we're going to be late to the event, okay? So we're driving around Los Angeles, and we're late trying to find this arena, and we ask a police officer. Now, I'm a police officer at the time, so being a police officer, I asked a police officer for directions, and he swore at me and called me all kinds of filthy names the whole nine yards, and Hector drove away and said, "Now do you see how the police treat people?" And I was like blown away by it. I mean, I'm a cop. I was blown away by it. I wanted to get out of the car and tell this guy, "You know who you're talking to?" I didn't even bother. But the bottom line was, I guess that was sort of a portrait of the LAPD that I would later see in the media. But that's the way they treated me down there. So we get to the arena. And, you know, Roberto Duran and Cuevas are going back and forth. And Cuevas checks Duran, I think, in the third round with that vaunted left hook, you know, the one that broke a whole lot of jaws and made him welterweight champion with limited skills. I mean, Pepino Cuevas, if there was a guy, I'm not trying to say I thought I could have beat Cuevas, but I could have stayed away from that hook. That's all he had was that left hook. But yet he knocked out guys, and Harold Webb, I mean, he knocked out a lot of good guys. He beat some good guys, no doubt about that. So he and Duran are poised, and he clocks Duran in the third round. Duran just looks at him, blinks at him. Was that all you got? Anyway, bottom line is the fight was stopped in the fourth round. I think the referee that night was Dr. Referee James Jen Kinn. Of course, the famed doctor from down there, my buddy, the boxing doctor, but he's also a referee. So the fight stopped. We go to the post-fight press conference, and I remember it was really a buzz, man, because, you know, this is like it's Mexico versus Mexico, sort of, because, you know, Duran's half Mexican. He's Mexican and Panamanian, so he's mixed there. And the bottom line was, you know, there's a lot of Mexicans in Los Angeles, and they filled the sports arena that night thinking that their hero, Pepino Cuevas, would be able to silence the man from Panama. Well, it didn't happen that way. So Duran's coming down the escalator. He's talking about being reborn, this kind of stuff. So we take off afterwards, and we're heading in a car, a rental car, and Hector's got this address. And this is before GPS and that kind of stuff, right? And you're driving around L.A., and there's nothing worse than being in L.A. and you don't know L.A. I mean, you just don't know. So we're driving around and around and around. Finally, we get to this house in East L.A., and it's Duran's relatives, and they're going to have a little celebration party and this and that. So Roberto's not there yet, because I think Roberto got lost trying to find the place. Anyway, so we finally get there. Roberto shows up. He jumps out of a van, and he looks up at the sky. He says something to the guy, this and that, and he jumps down to do a push-up and kisses the ground. And that was sort of like a significant moment in his life, because he was back in the boxing world. Of course, later on that year, he would go on and be the underdog against Davey Moore in June of 1983. Of course, a decided underdog, 3-1 underdog for the WBA Junior Middleweight Championship against the undefeated kid from New York City. Of course, that didn't end too well for Mr. Moore in the eighth round. Of course, the referee Ernesto Magana let that beating go on way, way, way too long. And then Roberto went on to take on Marvelous Marvin Hagler, of course, the undisputed world middleweight champion, the man that had beaten everybody that had beaten him. The two guys had beaten him. Marvin took care of that. He cleaned up all his old business, no doubt about that. Marvin was the man at 160. And here was this short little guy, this little guy with the little arms. Talk about the lightweight champion, former lightweight champion who started out at 122 pounds as a boxer. Here he is, pot-shotting the world middleweight champion. I mean, pot-shotting him. And after 12 rounds, guess who was up after 12 rounds? Well, it wasn't Marvin Hagler. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So Duran, of course, a smaller guy, as I said, 25 pounds, naturally smaller than Marvin Hagler, would lose the 13th and the 14th and the 15th round, basically because he was gassed. He was tired. Had there been a 12-round fight, history might have been a whole lot different. But the bottom line was that was one of the travels. I remember going home on the plane, and Hector and I don't travel too well. In fact, we had some nightmares as far as travel was concerned. But I remember going home on the plane. That was a very happy return, no doubt about that. Roberto Duran back on top, and that was his year, 1983. People thought he was done, of course, coming off the Kirkland Lang loss early the year before in 1982, of course, on ESPN. A big, big guy, like a 5-1, 6-1 favorite over Lang. Lang just outworked and out of shape Roberto Duran. And you can get Duran. That's what was the problem with Roberto. Is that, and I think Larry Merchant pointed that out. He said he had a hard time getting him in shape fight after fight. In other words, he'd get in shape for one fight, and then he wouldn't get in shape for another fight. Okay, in other words, you know, he'd be sort of lackluster in this, and he gets fat in between fights, and of course, in 1983, he kept his act together. 2-1, that was his record, and of course, almost beating Marvin Hagler was a significant accomplishment for a man from 122 pounds as a professional. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Sir Kenneth Rainford having Skype problems as far as the phone lines are concerned. But when I talked to Kenny earlier today, he was thinking that the strategy put forth by Josh Taylor was not all that convincing. In other words, he thought that Kenny thought that they should have put more into it, should have been a bit more aggressive, should have been throwing more punches down the stretch. And as I said, complacency set in there. The young corner man, the 27-year-old corner man that was guiding Josh Taylor last night, I don't think that he put the fire to put the, you know, listen, you got to put your foot on the pedal and step on it, keep on it. You don't let off. I think he let off. He dropped him twice in the sixth and the seventh round. That drop in the seventh round, especially when he was concussed hitting the canvas. Talk about Ramirez. I mean, the fact that he got up and afterwards he said he was never hurt and that kind of stuff. Well, you weren't hurt, but you were sleeping. I mean, had you just like been able to suspend it in air right there, you'd have been snoring. That's how you were knocked out. I mean, let's cop to it. Anyway, bottom line is at the end of the night, it was a competitive effort on both men's part. We have a new king in boxing. As I said, he'll sell out stadiums in the UK, and that's the way you want to go. No doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Checking your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA, open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, the boxing world abuzz because of the fact that the Anthony Joshua fight with Tyson Fury will not happen. Wait. Didn't we just say last week that fight was signed and ready to go? I mean, was it a signed and ready to go? I mean, it was done. It was happening, right? Well, it ain't happening no more. An arbitrator jumped in. An arbitrator is an independent third party, like a judge, but not going to trial, that sort of rules on legal matters, okay? And the bottom line was Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder had a clause in their contract where they could go to arbitration afterwards. Well, evidently this was binding arbitration because what the arbiter said stood. What I'm trying to tell you is most arbitrations are non-binding. You sort of recommend something, but when it's binding arbitration, that dictates what's going to go down. So the arbitrator said that Tyson Fury must have a third fight with Deontay Wilder. That was part of their contract, and it should take place next. So you're thinking that Deontay Wilder would take a bunch of money and step out? No. He's going to take a bunch of money and fight Fury the third time. What can he do the third time if he didn't do the second or the first or the second time? I don't know. I mean, they had 19 rounds together, right? And Fury won 17 rounds. So what more do you want? 17 out of 19 rounds. He got dropped in those two rounds he lost. I think it was the fifth and the 12th round. Or the fifth and, yeah, I think the fifth and the 12th round against Deontay Wilder. Outside of that, he was in command the entire time. So what do you think Deontay Wilder can do in the third fight that he couldn't do in the first and the second fight? I mean, even if he brings in his trainer, okay, his new trainer, Malik Scott, okay, so Malik was a guy that, what did, Socrates Palmer said he takes a better dive than Greg Louganis, and Greg Louganis was an Olympic diver, a gold medalist, so I don't know what he was trying. I know what he was implying there is that, you know, Malik Scott took a dive against Deontay Wilder. Possible? We'll talk about that with Socrates Palmer at hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. But Sir Kenneth was telling me had Josh Taylor just stuck with Barry McGuigan's strategy just to stay on top of him. I mean, stay on, not box that much. I mean, I think Josh Taylor wanted to look pretty. In other words, a lot of British boxers, you know, they're gritty and tough and all that kind of stuff, and they like to fight with their face, but he tried to put on a different, tried to portray a little different, perspective of British boxing last night. But being able to move and stick and move side to side, I mean, I gotta tell you, outside of Ramirez like throwing some good body shots, Ramirez didn't put it together. And the reason why he didn't put it together was the jab was coming at him. One, two, hooks, straight lefts, and there was a variety of punches from the left-hander, and that kept Mr. Ramirez at bay for the rest of the night, for the most of the night. Anyway, 27-1, his record drops, of course, to 27-1. No shame in that. Former 140-pound champion, he can go home and tell his people, you know what, at one point in time, I was world champion. But at the end of the day, the right guy won because he deserved to win. There's no doubt about that. Josh Taylor deserved to win. I had a little bit further than 114, 112, but boxing's PhD Socrates Palmer said that he almost lost. He had it 114, 112. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, checking your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Coming up on today's show, Dr. Nitin Sethi. Who is he? He is the chief brain doctor for the New York State Athletic Commission, amongst some other titles he's got regarding, you know, boxing and neurology. Straight up, we'll hear from him in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council. The WBC.
Let's do it. Anybody who wants to fight, let's go.
You just fall. miss you a lot. It's been long enough. Can we talk?
The great Lenny Williams, of course, on Sports Byline, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My man Lenny Williams, of course, got a new album out, a new drop. I keep saying albums, but Cuddy keeps telling me they're drops, okay? He's got a new drop out. And that's one of them. Check it out. It is at LennyWilliams.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the World Boxing Council. Of course, you can check out the WBC on their website, WBCBoxing.com. The WBA, I take it back to WBO and WBC featherweight champion of the females is Amanda Serrano. Of course, amazing athlete, 40-1 with one draw and 30 KOs. Of course, that's pretty epic as far as world of the world of boxing is concerned. But on June 11th, she's going to take part in an MMA fight. She's going MMA, full contact. It's going to be her third MMA fight. She's got one fight with one win and one draw. So she's 1-0-1. But the bottom line is this is stepping it up to another level. And I'm not a proponent of mixed martial arts to the point where I think that boxers should cross over. I think if they're making some money as far as boxing is concerned, I think Amanda's doing okay for a female. She's on top of her game, so she must be doing okay as a female boxing champion. But I think that what she's trying to do is allure somebody into a boxer versus kick fighter match, you know, like Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. I mean, let's be honest. The fight was a farce, but it made all kinds of money. Speaking of all kinds of money, the UFC brought in $890 million last year. Of course, they gave the fighters 10 bucks. That's right. 890. Kenny's ready to go? Hey, let's go with Sir Kenneth Rainford from the UK. Kenny, are you there?
I am indeed, sir.
Right on. Kirk Kenneth, we had some technical difficulties there. Let's talk about Josh Taylor last night. Glasgow, Scotland's what he calls home. I thought he was brilliant at times, but I thought he sort of got complacent there.
Yeah, for me, he did too much boxing. These two fighters were made to lie on each other's chest and bang away, and it didn't seem to happen. You know, the new corner team seemed to want him to box more, use his right jab and straight shots. I feel two fights ago, Taylor would have maybe been with a shot of stopping him, you know?
But so the corner, in my mind, the corner was blowing it because we're sitting here screaming at the TV. At least I am, and a couple of my buddies were at different TVs or computer screens where happened to be watching the fight because we can see him not doing what he should be doing. If you're going to dominate a fight, dominate it. Don't go out there and try to showcase showboat. And I think that Josh Taylor sort of got caught up in his own press releases to an extent, in his own hype, and the corner told him, you know, not to go out there and take care of business in the 12th round. That was almost a fatal mistake.
Echoes of the same thing with Wilder and Tyson Fury the first time around. Just boxing, you know. Second time around, different change of team, and Tyson Fury went at Wilder and stopped him. And I just don't think it's, you know, Ben Davis obviously a good trainer, but Taylor for me needs a trainer like McGuigan.
Barry McGuigan, is that what you're talking about? Or his son.
Yeah, but his son had him as well.
Okay. How good is the son? You know, Barry and let me tell you a little story about Barry McGuigan. He was training for Stevie Cruz. He was in Palm Springs. We were training at the Canyon Hotel, the Palm Canyon Hotel down there in Palm Springs. Roberto Duran was there. He was going to fight Robbie Sims, I think. Barry was going to take on Stevie Cruz. And Barry and I ran a couple times in the morning. He's a great runner, no doubt about that. I mean, not quite as quick as Ray Leonard, but he's a pretty good runner. So he didn't want to expose himself to the heat that much. In other words, he trained in a tent that was sort of air conditioned and things like that. He really didn't want to get out there in the sun. And then Barney Eastwood put him in 106 degree sun and with a broken eardrum to boot. So Eastwood called me that morning. These guys suit each other. You know that. Eastwood and Barry McGuigan suit each other. And Eastwood had called me that morning and said to me, Pedro, what do you think about Barry? What happened if a fighter fought with a broken eardrum? I said, well, I think he'd have some balance problems and this and that, blah, 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 blah. And Barry fought with a broken eardrum. And then Barney Eastwood took him to court afterwards. And somehow Barney Eastwood won that lawsuit. So anyway, enough of that. McGuigan is a trainer. Good guy.
Yeah, he's a very good trainer. But he's the kind of trainer that Taylor needs because it's his style of fighting. Inside, working the body. That was the fight I thought we were going to see. I thought we were going to see a telephone booth, close quarters combat, banging away. Whichever fighter was the fitter, more determined fighter was going to get it. But it turned out to be a boxing lesson.
And when he was inside, he was like dominant. The uppercut, the body shots. I mean, he dropped him twice on the inside.
Yeah, but he also took a tremendous left hook to the body himself in the first round. I don't know if you saw that yourself, but he took it real well, and that for me said he was in good condition.
Okay. The kid came over without an entourage. I mean, there wasn't nobody there. Was his family even in the house?
I'm sure they were. And I don't know what's going on because there was no TV exposure over here for the fights at all. There was not a channel in Great Britain. Sky, BT, none of them carried the fights, and I find that mind-blowing.
Wait. You trying to tell me that Josh Taylor, the undefeated champion from Scotland, didn't get any UK TV for this fight at all?
Not at all.
Wow.
Not at all.
Is there some politics involved there or what? Sky, I mean.
Yeah. There's politics with MTK, I think. I think that, you know, the promotional outfit he's with, it, you know, the, you know, they've got some, you know, they don't carry well with the TV stations over here for some reason. For me, they're doing a tremendous job with him. And, I keep the politics out of the box and, you know, keep it to the fighter, you know.
So I guess the YouTube, clips of Josh Taylor beating up on Mr. Ramirez, I guess that went crazy in the UK.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was streamed, you know, people were watching it on their phones and stuff. It was streamed, through various, you know, ways of getting it. But, you know, that fight should have been on BT Sports or Sky Sports. No doubt about it. It even should have been pay-per-view, wasn't it? There's none of it.
Exactly. Two undefeated champions going toe-to-toe. Speaking of champions, of course, Tyson Fury, undefeated, now going to have to go back and rumble one more time with Deontay Wilder, the ultimate one-trick pony of the heavyweight division. Is there any chance of anything being different this time?
I've just got off the phone with one of Tyson Fury's agents, a friend of mine, Spencer, and he's so confident that this fight is just going to be an easy fight. Pedro, he's a dangerous guy. This is a dangerous fight. There's no two ways about it. The guy looks like he's lost all that weight that he packed on for the second fight. He's back trim. He's training on keeping distance. Anyone, you know, when you fight a guy like Wilder, at any given time, the fight can be ended, you know. So I just hope Tyson's training twice a day. He's in shape, but I just hope mentally he doesn't, you know, read his own clippings too much, that he's got this fella in the bag and it's a done deal of a win and all the rest of it. But again, politics, Pedro, you know, they're talking about Usyk.
Usyk and Joshua.
Joshua's got a Usyk, you know. And it's Anthony Joshua's last fight in the promotional contract with Barry Hearn.
Wow.
So, you know, would
Usyk present much of a challenge at heavyweight? I mean, I wasn't impressed with his last couple of fights.
No. I think that's just purely a money fight for both fighters.
Okay. Speaking of money fights, what are the big money fights right now besides Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua in the UK? I mean, Josh Taylor's going to be a big money fight no matter where he goes, I think, in the UK. Hey, what about, let's talk about him luring Terrence Crawford, tells me, and everybody's screaming about, I can't get a fight. Nobody wants to fight me. Let him drop back down to 140 pounds, go across the pond. He can bring his welterweight trinkets with him and they can match it up 140 pounds and fight for all the marbles.
Correct. I mean, if he can make 140 comfortable, that is a no-brainer fight, an absolute no-brainer fight. But do you know what? I think the big casinos in Vegas, they would probably pay more for the fight than what could be generated in the UK.
Yeah. Well, I guess with the crowds starting to open up now, of course, the COVID thing's starting to get COVID is starting to recede to an extent here in the United States. Speaking of COVID, how's COVID in the UK? Are they still on lockdown or what?
We're not on lockdown, but it's like if you socially go for a meal with friends and family, it's six to a table, no more than. You have to wear a mask in enclosed environments. You know, you're allowed to walk around the streets without a mask on and stuff like that. But, you know, supermarkets, you have to wear a mask. Anywhere where there's public, you need to wear a mask unless you're seated.
you know, Kenny, for a lot of people, a mask is an improvement. Back to 2014, Deontay Wilder and his new trainer, Malik Scott, fought. Malik Scott took one of the greatest dives in boxing history in Bayamón, Puerto Rico, according to boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. You remember that dive? I mean, that fight?
Vaguely, yeah.
So now Malik Scott's calling the shots for Deontay Wilder. So, I mean, how do you know? There's some type of an incestuous relationship there between these two guys. I mean, they fought, he took a dive, and now he's coming back to be his yes man in the corner because, you know, Deontay Wilder said that Mark Breland drugged him. He put Valiums in his water.
Well, he's lost the plot, hasn't he, if he's saying things like that. Why would Mark Breland want to lose his money, his golden ticket? Why?
Well, and another thing Breland was saying for the record, that he doesn't like to do bag work. He doesn't like to jump rope. I mean, these are all things that made Hector Martinez say for so many years that all Deontay Wilder was a street fighter with a right hand.
Yeah, and a prolific smoker.
He smokes cigarettes?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Oh, really? I thought, not funny cigarettes like me? He smokes real cigarettes?
He smokes the funny ones.
Hey, we all smoke the funny ones over here. Don't you get it? It beats drinking. I mean, look at it. I mean, I thought about it. I mean, you know, I used to hang out with the Irish guys in Vegas for the McGuigan fights and this and that. And, you know, I'm looking at myself and about 30, 35 years old at the time. And the other guys were 30, 35 years old. But they were drinking all the time and they weren't able to retain their game as long. You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And Kenny, one time I popped off one time when I was drunk, and I realized that I couldn't defend myself if I had to, and I said to myself, well, I never, ever put myself in that position ever in my life, and I haven't.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Nothing worse than getting your ass kicked drunk. You know how I found that out? When I was a policeman. We go to these bar fights, and you go there, and you see some guy that was like 6'5", and you see him all laid out. You say, who beat him up? And they go, that little guy over there. You say, well, how'd that work out? Well, the big guy was wearing dress shoes, you know, those slippery shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta come ready to go. So I never go out with slippery shoes either. All right, real quick. Joshua and Usyk, that's gonna happen, looks like. So Joshua rolls through Usyk. Does Fury roll through Mr. Deontay Wilder inside of 5 or 6 rounds? Is it a quick thing or what?
I hope so. I really do. Because like I say, you know, Wilder's a dangerous cookie. But I think, you know, the only way Tyson Fury can beat him is by getting on him, jumping on him early, and don't give him any room, back him up. This guy can only fight and punch going forward. Going backwards is a different story, and that's what Tyson Fury now knows. He has to jump on his bike and get him.
The great Sir Kenneth Rainford on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. That's what we call him, the UK ace. Buddy, have a great week.
You too.
Kenny Rainford, the Skype worked. Right on, Cuddy. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC with Pedro Fernandez.
Well, where do you hurt?
It's my head, Doc. It's my head.
Dizzy? Ringing in your ears?
Well, I mean, it's all the time, Doc.
Like bells?
That's it, Doc, like bells. Huh? That Doc.
How do they go? Dong-dong, ding-ding, or ding-dong? It's important.
Ding-dong? Dong-ding?
No second guessing. Too bad. Should go dong-dong.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The horns of the mighty Tower of Power bring us back from the break. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Usually we're WBC Boxing TV as well, of course, but the twitch.tv. The Sports Byline USA channel is down. They'll get us together. Hopefully, we're going to do a Zoom thing real soon. We can Zoom both guys, like the host and the guest, in on the same screen. So we're working on that as I speak. The stream thing is a bit of a headache. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live, where I check it 37, make that 38 plus years now. Often imitated, but never duplicated. Brandon Figueroa, standing 5'8". Wow, the kid can crack. Of course, the guy from Texas, the current world WBC and WBA 122-pound super bantamweight champion, 22-0 with a draw and 17 wax scores, coming off that knockout of Luis Neri and grabbing the WBC belt last week, a fortnight ago. I got to tell you, 122 pounds is one of the hottest divisions ever. And what I'll tell you is that it's between bantamweight and featherweight, and it has such great, Wilfredo Gomez. He was 32-0 with like 32 knockouts. Had that draw, I think, when he first turned pro. He went on a 32 knockout run. Of course, he was the world champion at 122 in the epic fight. He had maybe the greatest fight of all time in the minds of the great Harold Letterman. And of course, his anniversary is coming up June 13th. Harold Letterman had passed away, but Harold told me that the greatest fight he ever judged, not on HBO, but the greatest fight he ever judged as a professional boxing judge, was Lupe Pintor and Wilfredo Gomez, and it went 14 rounds with Pintor resigning on one knee. Bottom line is, it was one of the greatest fights of all time. That is 122 pounds. Let's see if Brandon Figueroa can live up to that. That's a tall order. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Another tall order is hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. After the news, we'll bring in the brain doctor, Dr. Netan Sethi, and of course, we'll go with boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. Next up, hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the news, right here on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and 1,000 other internet platforms. Bottom line is, after the news, hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline.